Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Coach Kelly.
Kelly, it's so good to see your
face. I know, you too.
Feels like it's been a total whirlwind. I know you have to catch me up on how your Thanksgiving went.
Horrible, I can tell you in one word.
You tell me first.
Okay.
What happened?
So I had these big, grandiose dreams of just having a relaxing vacation. For those of you who don't know, I decided to not cook and just go away to a resort with my husband and my two kids, and they have a great kids club. I thought, perfect, I'll put the kids in the kids club for a couple hours. My husband and I can actually know each other again instead of roommates. We could actually have a conversation. My kids just weren't having it. They did. Well, my little one got a fever and then they didn't want to go in the kids club. They just did not want to go. So we kind of spent the hour in the kids club with them, just kind of doing projects and whatnot. And then my younger one wouldn't sleep that night, so my husband drove him home at 1 in the morning from Palos Verdes.
Oh, you poor thing. And the whole focus last week was whether or not you could get London to be not afraid of the potty.
Forget the potty. That was even beyond that. It was how was he going to get into the kids' club? So,
My gosh.
Yeah, so it was pretty nuts. But, yeah, I mean, at least I didn't have to cook. I guess that's the silver lining, right?
Well, they say, right, whatever doesn't kill us makes us stronger. So these boys were put in your
I'm like
reason.
WWF strong.
Yes. I'm telling you. What is the lesson you think you're supposed to be learning?
This is the biggest spiritual lesson I've ever had in my life.
Were you ever mean to boys?
No.
No, never.
I was boy crazy. I loved boys. I don't know. Maybe I'm just going to have really easy teens. Let's just hope.
That's okay.
Remember the psychic said that
on the
show? She's when they're 14, 15.
Yeah, they'll be a breeze. Easy breezy.
Another 10, 11 years.
Yes, and then you'll always have lots of ammunition to punish them with all of these.
Yes, exactly. And great stories for the bar mitzvah and the wedding. So,
goodness.
Tell me about you. What happened?
Well, my actual weekend was beautiful and delightful.
Oh, good.
Going to visit Tiffany up in Grass Valley. It was just so pretty. It went all the way down to 30 degrees. It was really, really chilly. It was just so, and the air was so clean and it was just so great. She actually had to move. She moved out of the yurt.
She did?
Yes. And she found, I'm telling you, she's a fairy because she wishes for something
and it
just shows up.
Wow.
So she says, the week before she says, Mom, I have to leave the yurt because I'm really afraid that if it starts to snow, the roads out here are just not well done for snow where she was living because it was way off the beaten path.
Yeah.
So she goes, and I need to find a house because I need to find something for my dog. I'm like, yeah, good luck with that, sister, right?
Yeah.
She calls up. She goes, I found this great house. This guy has done this creation of this a little apartment, but on the land. So she has the use of the yard for the dog.
Oh.
This place is gorgeous. I'm telling her, I will take it if you don't want it. It was
that's
stunning.
Great.
He had redone the whole thing. It had a way better bathroom than I have.
Oh, my God. That's so nice.
He had done
nice.
All this work. It was just, it was amazing. But the clincher was on Wednesday, Tuesday night, in the middle of the night, I woke up throwing up and diarrhea, the whole thing, nauseous, awful, ended up with 102 temperature on Wednesday, was flying out on Thursday at 6 o'clock at night. I'm like, there's no way I can get on this plane. By 9 o'clock that night, my fever went away. It's like I talked to my daughter and she goes, I'm going to pray for you. And I'm like, I'm going to pray for me too. Like, there's no way this is going to happen.
And you were fine.
I was fine. So weird.
Unbelievable.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God, you've been around my kids too long. That's part of it.
Well, that was what was so weird is I was sick three times since August. That was the third time.
And I know, and you never get sick. I know.
Never.
It's really weird.
It's really, really strange.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe I have to check my diet or something.
All right, something.
Maybe it's the lack of sleep.
It probably is.
My
your
body's
immune system.
Wearing out.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough complaining.
Yes.
Well, I have lots and lots to be grateful for.
That's true.
It was a beautiful weekend. And here we are again together. And
it's awesome. The highlight.
And we made it. And now it's the countdown for, let's see, this Hanukkah is this Sunday night.
Yes.
Right? And then a couple weeks after that, there it is.
Isn't that crazy?
Yikes. It is crazy.
You're a hard person to get a gift for, by the way. I've been thinking about you literally for the past 3 weeks. Like, what should
no
I get?
No way.
Yes. What should I get? Like, you know, there's certain people that it's like, because you're so practical that I'm like, you know, it's like I want to do something lavish. I'm like, but she's too practical. Like, I'm trying to think of something. So, yeah, I think I got an idea of what I'm going to do.
Oh,
so.
You're very sweet.
Isn't that funny?
Very sweet. Yeah. And I love to shop for your kids.
Oh, my God. You're so cute.
So still. Glad when people have kids because I still want to be a grandma.
Please take them happily.
Okay, so we had a great show last week.
Yes.
We had two guests. We had Dr. Peter Preskop, who talked to us about alternative models for managing chronic pain for more than 10 years. He's been working with them and four mm-hmm. of them with a chronic pain clinic at the Betty Ford Center. And had a great book, Conquer Chronic Pain. So if you missed that interview, please go back and listen to that show. And then we also had one of your favorites, of course, Bill Phillips, the psychic medium and author of Expect the Unexpected. And he shared lots of stories about how he discovered his gifts. It was really,
really
sweet how he talked about his mom and her mom passing and that he knew that he had this ability. But it was interesting, too, for me to learn the different ways. Like, it's not like the stereotypic movie picture of how people think that people
it
show
is.
Up.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah. So. It's typically, I don't think a lot of psychics can actually see them. Mm-hmm. It's not like they come in, it's more of like pictures in their mind, like interpretations. So that's what I'm learning too.
Exactly. So we have a great guest today. So
yes.
We're going to introduce everybody to our guest today, Dr. Laura Choate. She's an LPC, a professor at Louisiana State University. She specializes in girls and women's issues in the mental health field. She's a current contributor to Psychology Today and has written dozens of evidence-based articles to academic journals and 3 books. She is also the recipient of the prestigious awards, including the American Counseling Association Best Practices Award. And she's here today to talk to us about her 4th book called Swimming Upstream, Parenting Girls for Resilience in a Toxic Culture, published by Oxford University Press. Wow. Welcome. Thank you for being here, Dr. Choate.
Thank you for inviting me to be on your show.
Oh, wow. Why don't you tell us a little bit now? I see that in your bio that you have a tween girl. How old is she?
She is 10 and a half. Oh. And then I also have a 12-year-old son.
Oh,
so, yes, I'm in the beginning of the tween and teen years.
Uh-huh. Fun.
Well, good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm on the other side. I'm so excited.
Oh,
as you heard
God.
Me talking about my daughter. She's 23, and boy, it's such a wonderful age.
I bet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the teenage years or tween years have been harder than when they were younger?
Well, speaking for me personally, no. I mean, it's much easier at the tween level because they can do more for themselves.
Yes.
And we haven't gotten into the teen years yet where they're facing all these pressures and dealing with all the teenage stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of right in between, and that's working well so far. I know it's kind of a holding pattern for now, but I'll take it.
Right, exactly.
We're not there yet because I know what's coming, and that's what I've written about in the book.
Nice.
And so I'm well aware, but personally, I'm not dealing with it yet.
Okay. Hey, so what inspired you to write this particular book? Is it because of your kids or just in your practice?
Well, you know, I started out working as a counselor and as a researcher looking at the mental health needs of college women. And what I saw is by the time they get to college, for so many women that are having problems related to eating disorders and substance abuse and self-injury and sexual trauma, that those problems are so deeply ingrained by the time they get to college, I thought, you know, we need to start earlier and looking at what's going on in the younger years that maybe we can do more prevention work and more prevention rather than remediation when they're older. And so as my daughter was born about 10 years ago, I started really looking into what are the issues that today's girls are facing. And I was realizing that it's a different world than it was when I was 10 years old or when I was, a preteen. And that there are so many more cultural pressures that are more intense for girls today that are setting them up for many mental health problems that if we don't address them now as parents, as professionals, that they're going to really be struggling as they reach the college age and adult years. So that was sort of the impetus was, I think we need to do something earlier. I think there's a problem here. And then when I had my own daughter, I said, yes, there is indeed a problem. I see it personally and professionally.
Yeah.
And so, everything else I've written has been for mental health professionals. And I said, yes, they need this information, but it's parents who are on the front line that sure. need it the most. So I wrote it for parents in a very reader-friendly way so that parents mm-hmm. can access the information, know what's going on, and then know what to do to make the situation better for their daughters.
That's awesome. And I love the concept of resiliency. I mean, it's just, the children are resilient, but we could certainly help them build upon that.
Mm-hmm.
I really would love to know what is meant by a toxic culture. You described that in your book. Maybe you could share with our audience some of that.
Right. Well, we are currently living in a culture that is very toxic for girls today. The culture sends pressures to girls, and primarily through the media, through lots of different means, not just TV and magazines and books, the internet, but also even through clothing, toys, just all the messages girls receive at a very, very young age that teaches them that their worth is based on their appearance. Mm-hmm. That they have to look as hot and sexy as possible, that their worth is based on their ability to get attention, that they need to be as famous as possible, both online and in person, and then it's based on their accomplishments, being able to be perfect, doing well in sports, doing well in extracurriculars, but also making good grades, being perfect, doing it all. So really, I call in the book, I talk about the three A's, attention, accomplishments, and the big one, of course, appearance.
Mm.
So that's what I mean by toxic culture, and that is a lot for any one girl to try to handle all at once as she's trying to grow up and learn who she is. And if she looks to the culture to find that answer, what she'll learn is, I've got to do all these things, be everything to everyone, mm-hmm. and it's it causes a lot of girls to struggle.
Well, it's so funny because I think back to my adolescence and I found it was really hard. And I always say, thank God I'm not growing up today, because I think it's even harder with all the social media and, you know,
yes.
I mean, you'd see the Kardashians and just sort of like, you know, that whole world and sort of keeping up with all of that. So, yeah, I think this is wonderful that you're speaking to parents. And I mean, I guess, you know, if you can briefly speak to how can parents help girls become more resilient given all this?
Right. And that's what the entire book is about. So I'll just kind of start small or start with the first steps, and then we'll move from there. I mean, the first thing is that parents have to be willing to swim upstream. And that's why I've called the book Swimming Upstream. What parents have to be able to do is say, just because every other family is rushing around and following these trends and doing things according to what the culture tells us we should do, we don't have to do that. We can make choices for ourselves and say, wait a minute, this isn't healthy for my daughter. This isn't healthy for our family. We can choose to do things differently. So as parents make a choice to stop and be mindful and make decisions for themselves about what's best for their family without just blindly following the culture,
mm-hmm.
then they can next help their daughters learn to do the same thing, because that's what they're going to have to do, is to be very strong and to be authentic and say, this is who I truly am, this is what I value, and I want to be who I am and not what the culture is telling me I have to be. And so that is an important first step, I think, is for parents to start and say, we're willing to be maybe the unpopular parents. We may not be doing what all the other parents are doing, but we're doing what's best for our family.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's really significant. I know that I work with a lot of parents of teenage girls, and it's interesting because sometimes a lot of the work needs to be done with the parents themselves, because they have the need to keep up with the Joneses, and they have the need to be popular, and they don't want to have the kid that's seen to be the nerd or the one that isn't with it. So a lot of them are struggling with their own sort of like unmet childhood needs of attention and acknowledgement and popularity. So they can be kind of very resistant to developing that resiliency.
Right. And how can we expect our daughters to be able to stand up and say no to things and say, no, I'm not going to follow the crowd, when she's never observed her parents being able to do that?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a first step, is recognizing the need to do that. And that's why in the book, in the first chapter, I cover, you know, what is the toxic culture? What are examples of the three A's, the appearance, attention, and accomplishments? So just parents will be aware of, this is the culture that we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So then they can take that information and make decisions about, what do I want for my daughter and my family? And then the rest of the book, I talk about specific resilience strategies and we can talk about different ones that you're interested in, promoting positive body image, mm-hmm. Developing healthy relationships, both with friends and with romantic partners, putting academic success in perspective. What is success really all about? It's not just about grades. Mm-hmm. It's about having a balanced life, that a girl is more than just her numbers.
Right.
And then I also talk a lot about developing positive coping strategies so that she knows how to handle life stresses and handle her emotions, and so that she's strong and resilient as she mm-hmm. grows up and leaves home.
So I have two boys, and I'm just curious if you can speak also to the parents of boys, if there's anything we can do to help girls thrive, because I'm sure that a lot of the boys aren't helping by, you know, kind of everything you talk about with the media and things like that. Is there anything that you can speak to parents of boys on their end that they can help?
Right. Well, yes, boys are immersed in the media messages, too. Mm-hmm. And so the more that they are adopting these cultural messages, then the more likely they are to view girls and women as objectify girls mm-hmm. and women, view them as objects, view them as sexualized beings instead of as whole human beings that are, you know, a lot more than just their bodies and what they look like. And we know that the more kids that they watch television, the more that they, especially programs that have sexualized themes, the more they play violent video games that often intertwine sex and violence, mm-hmm. the more that they're immersed in that, the more they're going to come to believe that. And so the more we can protect boys from being so immersed in those cultural messages, the less likely it will be that they will view girls in just such a one-dimensional way.
Sure.
And anything parents can do to help promote the image of girls are not just about their bodies and how they look and their ability to be hot and sexy. There's so much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And so dads play a role in that, too. When girls look at their dads and they see, well, all he talks about is how women look, you know, as women walk down the sidewalk, he's making catcalls at them, or he only values women based on their appearance, she will internalize that too and think, well, that must be all he sees in me.
Mm-hmm.
So being mindful at home of talking about women and all their great qualities and all their strengths and all their accomplishments and not just
right.
their appearance,
sure.
that goes a long way as well.
It's fascinating, having worked a lot with girls with eating disorders, you know, I pay a lot of attention to things in the media, and mm-hmm. it was always astonishing to me, even when the reporters are talking about women athletes,
yeah.
they always start with the beautiful 6-foot blonde,
mm-hmm.
whatever, like what the mm-hmm. heck does that have to
do with
this woman's athletic ability? But
yep.
those labels, those adjectives mm-hmm. are so prominent
yeah.
in everything that we do and read. Like, you can
yes.
almost never hear somebody describe a woman without talking about her physical attributes.
So true.
In some sexual way.
Yes.
In describing her. It's,
yes.
It's really...
Well, even when Bruce Jenner became Caitlyn Jenner, they were talking about her in the physical way.
Yes.
And it was like, you know, I think John Stewart
mm-hmm.
was the one who was talking about how, oh, welcome to being a woman. You know, like, this is, you know, what it is. It's tough.
Yeah, and that's probably one of my biggest pet peeves, too, is when parents will say, they'll just totally undermine the impact of the media or these video games on their children. They're just playing games. They're just playing games. Well, these games, though, are extremely meaningful in
yeah.
terms of the messaging that they're providing. So
right.
if you did just tune in, you're listening to Dr. Deborah and
Coach Kelly.
Coach Kelly. And we have a special guest today, Dr. Laura Choate, who is the author of Swimming Upstream, Parenting Girls for Resilience in a Toxic Culture. If you have any questions, you can call us at 323-203-0815. You can always email us. So let's go back to Dr. Choate. So what are some of the most common mental health problems that you see in adolescent girls?
Yes. Well, what we know is these pressures that are affecting girls at younger and younger ages. What we're seeing also is a rise in mental health problems as girls then reach the early adolescent years. As they reach puberty, their bodies are starting to change. All the pressures are starting to intensify, and we're seeing an increase in mental health problems such as depression, which the rates of depression triple in girls between the ages of 12 and 15. Whereas before that age, the rates of depression between boys and girls are about equal before the age of 12, whereas after that, it's 2 to 1, that
wow.
girls have depression at twice the rate of boys. And they really spike between the ages of 12 and 15, which is so unfortunate because that's also at the age when they're reaching puberty and having to deal with all those pressures. So, and then definitely anxiety disorders are on the increase. Substance abuse, which used to be something we worried about only with adolescent boys, now girls are drinking and having problems at similar rates as boys. And then, of course, eating disorders, which you already mentioned, which girls, it tends to peak. And they start having problems in the early adolescent years, and then around age 16 is when the full-blown eating disorders really start to emerge.
Sure.
And sexual trauma, dating violence, even among middle schoolers. I've been reading studies lately that show just the staggering numbers of middle schoolers that say they've already, like 25% of middle school girls say they've already experienced some kind of physical violence in their dating relationships, that they've gotten in a fight or something with a person that they're, whatever, if they're calling it dating, but that's the way the study measured it. And so they're growing up in an age where that's becoming normalized, growing up with depression, anxiety, violence, sexual trauma, and that all doesn't bode well for their futures. And that's why I'm concerned. That's why I wrote this book.
Wow.
Yeah, well, we're glad that you did.
Yes.
Yeah, stuff, it's just so, it's so dark.
It is.
It's really sad because we like to look at our culture and go, look at our kids are having so much fun. We've offered them so many great things, advances, et cetera, but there's this whole dark energy, this undercurrent that's so prevalent.
Well, and what concerns me a little bit is, it's actually an email that we got that I would love your insight on, Dr. Choate, because I think there is, it's trying to find that balance of, you know, not overparenting, but not, you know, but then realizing, gosh, the world can be unsafe too. So here's an email, and I'd love your thoughts. Dear Doc and Coach, I'm a mother of a teenager. I understand you're having Dr. Laura Choate today. I'm very happy to ask her this question. How do I not helicopter my teen, but also not free-range parent either? I'm having a hard time finding the balance between overparenting and underparenting. Any suggestions? Many thanks.
Wow, that is a great question because we do hear so much about helicoptering in the press today and how that's a bad thing because we're hearing about all these college students that by the time they get to college, they have no resilience and they are falling apart and they don't know how to deal with problems and their parents are having to come in and help with their class scheduling and help them figure out what to do on campus. So we want to raise our teenagers and our kids to be more independent, to be better problem solvers, but yet to do that, we can't just let go and just expect them to figure it out on their own. So it's always a sense of balance. How can we gradually over time build in some healthy but safe risk-taking so that she can do some things that help her feel adventurous, feel more independent, to get out that energy that she's experiencing as a teenager, but in a way that's safe. And as she handles that challenge, then maybe go to the next level and the next level, and you do it slowly rather than taking away it's like building a building. You don't just take away the scaffolding all at once. You build the scaffolding and take it away slowly.
Sure.
And so I know that's a very general answer, but it's a way of kind of a way of visualizing it.
Sure.
That architecture of putting the scaffolding around your daughter and taking it away slowly so that she can get out there, take some risks that are not too risky, but that allow her to develop some sense of independence, some skills for problem solving, for building that sense of confidence that she knows she can handle the things, the problems that life throws her way. Because everybody needs to have that sense of competence that I can handle what problem is going to come my way today. I'm pretty sure that I can handle that instead of feeling like you need to run to your parents or throw up your hands and just fall apart.
Sure.
Yeah, very true. Very true. You know, I like your answer a lot. Do you have more to add to that, Coach Kelly?
No, I totally agree.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, yeah, it's yeah.
As you were talking, though, I had an image. There was something in my, when I was a child, probably in early middle school, maybe late grammar school, I had a friend whose father was a psychologist.
Okay.
And brilliantly, he would gather that we had a group of about 4 to 6 girls that we always hung out together, and we would have conflicts and, you know, dealing with peer pressures and things like that. And he would actually invite us over to the house. And her mom was also I think she was a social worker. Mm-hmm. And they would have like a group, like a weekly or every other week meeting with all of us girls.
So nice.
And his, using some of his skills. It wasn't group therapy per se, but it was like a forum where we support all got group. To talk about our anxieties, about the world, about each other. I just always thought that was amazing, and that what a great thing that some parents could consider doing, sort of maybe like peer counseling, getting a couple of parents in the neighborhood together with some of the people, the peers that are friends, mm-hmm. and maybe have sort of like a open dialogue conversation about how to handle some of these things, because kids will often think that their own parents are too rigid or too uptight mm-hmm. or they don't get it. But if they see and hear another group of parents talking about their same concerns, that helps to ground it, I think.
I 100% agree. And even if there isn't a support group, but I encourage all girls to go to their guidance counselor, talk to somebody, so because it can be very isolating, mm-hmm. I think.
Yes, absolutely. You know,
but I love that idea, too. I remember when I was in sixth grade, the parents had like a meeting. And even that is nice, like just getting the parents educated. So it's like, you know, attack it from both ends, the parents, the kids, everybody. I'm all about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So how has technology created a disconnection between parents and children? And what are some solutions, Dr. Choate?
Wow, that's a big one, because it doesn't just affect the kids. It's easy for us to look at, a study came out recently from Common Sense Media, or it's a survey, and it showed that teens today are spending 9 hours a day on media. And that includes television, computer, music, all the, everything combined. But 9 hours a day, that's more than they spend sleeping.
Oh,
and so
God.
That's taking up most of their time, of their waking hours, other than when they're in school. And so we can say, oh, they've got a problem. They're on media too much, and they're not learning how to talk with one another face-to-face. Most kids say they'd rather text than talk to their friends mm-hmm. because it's too uncomfortable to have a face-to-face conversation. You can't control what's going to happen. So a lot of kids today are just kind of tuned out because they're so focused on media instead of face-to-face. But then we can't, as parents, just point our fingers, because so many parents are doing the same thing.
Right.
That they're saying, kids, put your phone away at dinner, but yet the parent has their phone out at dinner mm-hmm. checking their or texting or whatever it is they need to be doing. And so kids are growing up today with parents constantly being staring into their phones, not really listening to what's going on, not being fully present. Mm-hmm. Kids are just responding in kind. Well, I'm not going to be present either, so everyone's checking out. So the model, the key here is, the resilience strategy here is to be the model and to have some times when your whole family is unplugged.
Right.
And it is possible to say, we're good from this time to this time, we're not going to have any technology. We're going to interact with each other, be fully present with each other. And that can make such a difference, because kids can learn very quickly how to catch up for all those social skills maybe that they've missed out on over the years because they haven't been interacting directly with
sure.
people. And it's so important that we don't lose those face-to-face connections.
So interesting. I once saw Brooke Shields on, I think it was like Good Morning America or something, and she said that her kids started imitating her, you know, putting their head down and sort of, you know, texting like an imaginary text and saying, oh, I'm mm-hmm. mom, I'm mom, and kind of, you know, imitating her. And she said it was such a wake up call that she realized, oh my God, I'm really doing it a lot in front of my kids. And this is what they're seeing. They're seeing the bottom of my head, you know, and I need to be the model for them. And I always thought about that. And it's so true. I think a lot of parents don't realize how much, you know, they're modeling. Yeah.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. that whole thing about that kids can be in the back seat of the car, and rather than talking to each other, they're texting each other
yes.
instead of just having a conversation.
Oh, it kills me.
It's frightening.
Right. Right. And so it is okay, and this is what I mean for parents can make their own decisions. It is okay for parents to say, okay, we're going to have some technology-free time, or okay, give me your phone or give me your device, and you can't have it at night when you're in your room.
Right.
I mean, there can be a bedtime for mm-hmm. devices, too. And so many parents don't do that, and their kids aren't getting enough sleep, and they're up all night texting, and mm-hmm. They're on the internet, and that can be so harmful to kids because you don't know what they're doing
right.
when it's at night and you're in the other room sleeping. So it's okay to enforce those kind of limits and saying, you know, maybe no TV in the bedroom, no devices in the bedroom at night.
Right.
And to set those kind of limits to protect your kids when they're younger, and when they're in their teen years, to say that's a rule in our house because we want to protect you and we want to help you have healthy quality sleep as well.
Sure.
And that's also so difficult for many parents to have their children be angry with them. I mean, yes. So many parents say, oh, it's my job to make my kids happy. I mm-hmm. want my kids to be happy. Oh, now I'm going to be the one who's going to make them unhappy. But in order to have longer term happiness in the world, one needs to have limits and one needs to know what's really going to help that develop and help that blossom.
Right.
So it's okay, really, parents out there, for you guys to say, hey, you know what? Whether you're mad at me or not, I am doing this for the greater good of your socialization, your social skills, mm-hmm. your ability to have relationships with people. And you may not appreciate that right now, but it's true.
Exactly.
And it's what needs to happen.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. And it feels, and I don't mean to say this in a flippant way because I deal with it every day. I mean, just last weekend, my daughter was invited to a birthday party that I didn't think was appropriate for a 10-year-old. And because I was thinking, if she's doing this now, what are they going to be doing when they're 16? Because the parent had gotten a limousine and they were going to go to New Orleans. And it was just kind of this really elaborate affair. I said, we're not going to do that. And she was so hurt and so upset. And I said, well, you know, we're doing things differently in our family, and this is just what we've decided for you. And it was hard. She was very upset, but I felt very comfortable, and my husband, you know, made the decision with me that this was the right thing for our family. But it was not fun that day at all in our home.
Yeah.
So
we did not enjoy it.
I'm curious that after some time had passed, was she able to kind of get over it and see the value in the decision, or is she still kind of sore about it?
Oh, yes, because they came back, the girls that did go came back and said, oh, a bunch of them ended up crying and getting in a fight, and it was just too much,
sure.
which is what we thought. It was too much for 10-year-olds. So, yes, she came to terms with it.
Wow. Yeah. Well, good job. Yeah. I know it's hard. I remember having a really hard time because I parented my daughter mostly, you know, alone, like her dad and I co-parented, but not together because mm-hmm. We weren't together. And, you know, there were so many times setting limits that I know that he would never have even thought to set. So I would actually have to be the bad one, you
mm-hmm.
know, the one that would say, no, I mean, I'm just going to have to trump your dad on this one. I'm just going to have to trump this decision. And it was really, really hard. But I have to say that, mm-hmm. you know, several years later now, my daughter, she really does. She thanks me so much.
Oh, she does?
All. Yeah, she really does. Like
oh,
I really
wow.
went through that battle storm with her for years, and she's so appreciative of.
Oh my god, that's
things.
So good to hear.
It's so beautiful.
I love that you're on the other side because I'm like, you know, it's great. It's great for me
and
to
poor
see.
Poor Dr. Choate, it's only the beginning.
Yeah.
Has your
right?
Has she shown any of the snappy signs and sort of disrespect stuff towards you as often the young girls do with their moms?
Yes, she's definitely starting to do that, and I see it so much more towards me than towards my husband.
Mm.
But because I study these issues, and I'm better able to be more objective because I know it's not personal. And I want to say that to all moms out there. It's helpful to remember it's not personal. It's part of her development.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of her learning to, some of it is puberty and hormones and changes that she's undergoing, but it's also her developmental pull towards independence and separating from me, and it's something she's got to go through, and it's something that I have to accept that it's not about me. She's not doing it to me. She's doing it because this is part of her development. Now, I don't tolerate rude or disrespectful behavior, but I can understand I don't have to snap back at her, and I don't have to respond in anger because that's not what it's about.
So what is meant by parenting from your inner core? I know you talk about that in the book. What's that look like for parents?
Right. Yeah, I talk about that in terms of, I think I just gave a good example of it actually from my own life, and that is knowing who you are as a parent, what you want for your family, what you want for your daughter, and then making decisions from that place and not reacting in anger, not reacting in the moment because you haven't thought it through and decided, you know, what do I think about my daughter having a cell phone, or what do I think if my daughter wants to go to a boy-girl party, or what do I think about this, or wearing this kind of outfit, that you thought it through in advance, that you know clearly what are your values, what do you want for your daughter, where do you want your daughter to end up, what kind of adult do you want her to be, and then you make decisions from that inner core. So not in the moment, not when you're angry, but from a place of thoughtful, mindful reflection. And that's what I do in the book, too. I try to help parents reflect on what do I really want? Mm-hmm. And what kind of qualities do I want my daughter to have when she's older? Because, as you've already said, you need to start now. It doesn't just happen when she's 23.
Right. Totally. Oh, my gosh. I totally agree with that. And I know I remember many parenting moments, putting my foot in my mouth, making a decision before I was ready to make a decision. And those mm-hmm. are the worst ones. Because, you know, once you say yes to your child and then you second guess it, oh, it's yes. so hard to take it back. Because then they just find you, that you just lose all credibility.
Yeah.
So I just found it was so much better to just simply say, that's a great request. I am going to give that further thought. Mm-hmm. I will get back to you. Bye.
Yes.
And then I will always try to set a time limit so that I wouldn't leave her like, well, when am I going to know? When am I going to know? Okay, so something reasonable, but within 24 hours or within mm-hmm. 12 hours or something that would just make it tangible for her.
Yes.
That seemed to always be a little bit helpful in grounding mm-hmm. her.
Yeah, I do that too. I'll like if I don't know on the spot, I'll just say, well, let me talk to your dad about it, because that gives me like a little bit more time. And exactly. But I like your idea of setting even more time parameters around it, because then that, you know, then they're not bugging you about what time and everything like that. Yeah.
Oh,
smart.
Those challenges. Well, we only have a couple minutes left, so why don't you give us some more of your thoughts, some closing thoughts about what you'd like people to learn from the book and how they can get it and all those good things.
Okay. Yeah, because I think one thing I haven't said that I think is the most important thing to keep in mind, and I think most parents do this, but it never hurts to hear this, is to love and accept your child so that they feel fully loved, fully accepted, fully validated just for who they are and not who the culture expects them to be. Because if your daughter looks to the culture, she's going to feel like she never measures up. She's never good enough. She doesn't have enough friends or followers or fans or whatever they might be called. She doesn't have it. She's not enough. She doesn't measure up to whatever that cultural ideal is. So she's looking there, she's going to feel empty and hollow and distressed. So at home, what if she can get from you, her parent, that she's loved, she's accepted, that you like her, that you fully appreciate all of her strengths and abilities, even if they don't match what the culture is saying, that's good enough. She's enough just as she is. And that goes such a long way. When girls get that at home, they're not searching so hungrily for it from everywhere else, from guys, from friends, from other people in the future.
That's beautiful.
And then the other thing is that it's okay not to follow the crowd. It's not okay to, it is okay not to follow the culture, because the culture is sending very toxic messages for girls. Mm-hmm. And then as far as, those are big ideas, I know. And as far as the book, it's available on all online booksellers, Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, all the usual online retailers. It's available through the Oxford University Press site as well, but I think it's the easiest to just get it on Amazon or one of the online sellers. And also, it's you can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, and then on my blog on Psychology Today, which I'm a parenting expert blog, which is called Girls and Women's Wellness.
Fabulous. Wonderful. Thank you, Dr. Laura Choate, author of Swimming Upstream, Parenting Girls for Resilience in a Toxic Culture. Really appreciate all of your insights and information.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wow. Really interesting stuff.
Yeah. You know, brought to mind so many different topics that get stirred up when we have some of these interviews. So I'm glad we have a couple minutes to actually...
To talk about it. Yeah, sure.
You know, one of them being when she was commenting about, you know, going through this with her own daughter and having mm-hmm. the information so that to not personalize that. And I think that whole separation individuation process, that fancy word that we use for mm-hmm. development, you know, you probably are going to have an easier time a little later on than David's going to have because you have two boys.
Yes.
And the one thing that you can't be different about is the same gender, right? They have the same gender. So no matter what, they have to find a way to push off more from him. So you may just get a pass somewhere.
Please, I need a freaking pass.
You're paying your dues now.
Exactly.
But I mean, I noticed that, my goodness, my daughter was so much harder on me than she was on her dad in that way, because she just didn't have to feel that need to be so different from him, because by nature of being a different gender, you're different.
It's so interesting, because I always wondered like why the mother-daughter relationship feels harder than the mother-father, and that makes so much sense.
Maybe you're gonna get lucky later on, and David will be pulling his hair out if he has any hair left.
Right? Yeah, he's going to be bald.
He has a full head of hair, doesn't
yes,
he?
Yes, not for long with these two.
I also wanted to comment on something she was saying, too, about, you know, the culture and not fitting into the culture. There is some sense of people do need to feel a sense of belonging to a greater community than to just a family system. And so maybe an alternative to that is also to ask your children to brainstorm with you what parts of culture are valuable, what parts of the culture are something that we would want to adopt and accept, and
that's
not to just
really
look
smart
at the dark side, but the light side.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, exactly. And even with technology, I mean, I think there's great sides of it too. Even with learning, I mean, I see how Remy is like learning so much with science games and different things. And so it's like, yes, there's a lot of screen time, but he's also really interested in all this stuff and he's learning so much. So there is, you know, that flip side too. I think that's a great idea.
Do both of your children have iPads at school or computers?
They know in elementary school they get iPad time, I think like a half hour maybe per week or something like that. It's like once or twice a week. They come in with the cart. They love the guy who brings the cart in. He's like the best person on the planet because he's got the iPads, and they're like, Mr. Jackson, you know, and they're all excited. But yeah, they get it like once a week. And then my little one at his preschool, they've got computer time once a week too, because I mean that's the way the world is going. It's kind of crazy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm still always so amazed by how much technology there is that I need to learn. I feel so far behind.
Oh my God, it's so funny. My boss at work will sometimes be like, Kelly, can you help me? You know, because he's like older than me. And then I'm like, oh my God, I feel like I need to ask like a 20-year-old, you know? Like I'm nothing compared to some of these people coming right out of school. It's amazing.
What do you think about social media and teenagers in terms of like it all started out with, what was it, MySpace?
Yes.
And turn to Facebook and now Twitter and Instagram and all that. And people can be on that stuff like ad nauseum, nonstop.
Well, I can't believe she said 9 hours.
That
really scares me. But I think what scares me more than anything, which I've shared before, is that interpersonal relationship, that we're missing out on that, and that a lot less people are having that face-to-face conversation, which is so important. I mean, to look at somebody in the face and kind of, you know, to connect with them and see what they're feeling and, you know, how they're reacting to what you're saying. Because I think with text, I mean, you can, oh my God, you can overanalyze and she didn't put an explanation. That means she's not excited or she sounds angry. And it's like, you know, texting doesn't have a tone. So you can kind of make up all these things in your head. So I worry. And then I worry about all the people who are looking to how many likes and how many followers for to feel validated. And that's just hard too. I think it's tough. I think it's really, really hard.
You know, and I don't know that like anybody can fall into that trap. You know, like I take pride in really acknowledging that that's not my value. That's not what's important. It's what my friends think about me. It's what I think about me. It's the community that I belong in that's important to me. And yet, you know, trying to build my social media platform, look at what I only added 3 more Twitter followers. What's wrong with me? I have chopped liver? My chicken liver? Like it was like, oh my gosh, you know, it can be so consumptive. And I can see what she's saying about how, you know, self-esteem can be so much based on what somebody accomplishes or how their popularity as opposed to just being.
Yeah, of course.
What happened to just being able to be? Like go out on a bike ride with your girlfriend. And,
I know,
you know,
right.
Just hang out and eat an ice cream cone and talk about, you know,
whatever.
Your period.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God. Life was so simple. Yeah. It's so true. Wow. But I'm really glad she wrote this book. And I think it's really important for parents to help their kids be more resilient. I really do.
I do too. So I want to go back to you said that I'm hard to buy for. Interesting. Yes. You got me intrigued.
Don't you think so?
Well, I would think that I'm really easy to buy for because I am so practical.
That's funny. But I feel like, let's see. Like, I feel like you're almost in like the my husband and dad category because you're so practical that it's like you either like don't need that or it's like that's going to feel too lavish or that's going to, you know what I mean? I can't explain it but it's a great thing. I mean, it's a good thing in the sense that, but I just have to, I think I have the perfect gift for you. So we'll see, hopefully.
And now I would think that you're more difficult to
buy
for.
Oh, you think so?
Yes.
Oh, that's funny.
Because you like a lot of like things that are probably outside of my awareness.
Oh, really?
You know? Like, I know a lot about you, but I don't know a lot about you.
That's
I remember
so funny.
The time we were shopping in the mall.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you were showing me, like, I pointed out some things I thought you would like. I don't like that.
That's really funny. Yeah. No, but I guess, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But I love it when people know what they like and what they don't like.
Yes.
See, that's actually, and I like it too when people understand that, you know, it is the thought that counts, right?
Sure.
So you give something to somebody, and I really tell people, and it doesn't hurt my feelings, if you don't like
yeah.
it, because who am I to know what somebody else's tastes are? I don't spend every day with you.
Exactly.
I don't know your evolution or your changes. Or
right.
You may like something someday and then learn some news about it the next day and decide
sure.
that you don't like it.
Yes,
right? So
exactly.
I just wish more people would not take personally.
I know what the, it's so true. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I 100% agree with you. I don't know if I ever told you the story about my husband when we were dating.
Tell.
Oh my God. So he comes from an engineering background. That's important in the story. But anyway, so we are dating. It was probably dating a few months, and he buys me for, I don't know, probably 3 months in, he brings me a Tiffany's box jewelry. I'm like, oh, what's this? So open it up. And it's a Tiffany's keychain. And he says to me, Kelly, I don't know what you're into. I don't know what you like. So I just bought you a keychain that you can go back in, exchange it, and get something you like.
Okay.
It was really funny. So I go back into the Tiffany store and I go up to the sales associate. I said, you know, my boyfriend bought me this. You know, he said I could exchange it. And she said, is he an engineer? I said, how'd you know? She said, because this is the most practical thing in here, a keychain. And we always joke about it. He's like, of course it is. That would be the only thing I would get in that store. It'd be like a keychain. It's really funny.
That is hysterical.
But yeah, I always think about that. But he's so relaxed about that too, that he's like, look, you know, I want you to be happy. That's my goal. So if you want to exchange it, if you don't like this, I am not insulted in the least. Yeah, but I know people who really hold tight to their gifts that, you know, if you get them something, they are extremely insulted. We're getting a phone call. Let's
okay.
see. Hi, you're on live with Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly. Hello.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Do you have a question for Dr. Deborah or Coach Kelly?
Yes, is Dr. Choate still on the show?
Is Dr. Choate still on the show?
Is Dr. Choate.
No, you know what? They're not on the show. Did you have a question? Maybe we can help you.
Well,
it's not.
Okay.
So
there was a lot of static in the background. It was a little bit hard
to
hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but yeah, some people hold tight to their gifts and they
right.
like get very insulted. If you like insulted, it's like it feels very
yes.
personal. Like I, yeah.
And part of why I'm talking about this, because it is a big time of the year right
yes.
now that people are stressing about buying gifts
yeah.
for people.
Sure.
And I just think it's really important to take a deep breath and just, you know, this is... It's okay. You know,
right.
it's the thought that counts. We were, when I was in Grass Valley visiting Tiffany, they had these two things there. They're an annual, like a Christmas crafts and things
uh-huh.
like that show. That's all
sure.
like people from the local community that made these things. And that
yeah.
was like, was so special to
uh-huh.
buy these little things that we know that somebody there
sure.
had,
locally.
Had made.
Yeah.
You know, that was really, really cool. And then, but I still, my daughter is the most indecisive
is she?
In terms of what she wants.
Oh.
So we're sitting out there. It's 30 degrees outside.
She's
and
like
we're
looking.
This, yeah. And she just keeps going back to this one booth. I mean, we spent about 45 minutes at a handbag place for
oh
her to pick.
God.
And in the end, she says, I don't think I want any of them.
This is so, wait, what's her sign? Is she Libra? What is she?
She's a Sagittarius.
Oh, she is. Okay.
No, she's extremely opinionated and stubborn in lots of ways and
okay.
very decisive. But
yeah.
when it comes to, she's always wants to have the absolute perfect
yeah.
thing. So afraid that she'll regret it.
Sure.
You know,
if she
but
picks
it. It was absolutely adorable. I was like, yep. She's still my daughter.
Yeah, exactly. Of course.
Anyway, so gosh, we are coming
yeah.
up to the end.
It's crazy.
I can't believe it.
Next week, we have J.P. Hansen, author of Find Your Bliss. It's going to be really interesting. Maybe he can help us find ours as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, as we were talking about, because it is the wave of Facebook, Twitter, and
yes.
all that, please, if you're so inclined, please like us on our Facebook and
like
on our
me,
Twitter.
Like me.
Just like our show.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You know, if you don't like us, too, you know, we're always open to suggestions. So
sure.
If anybody wants to send us an email, not just for questions for the show, but we would love your comments and feedback
yeah.
about how you think the show's been going, because we did hit over 115,000
yes.
listeners.
It's
absolutely.
Amazing.
Absolutely. And make
good.
Sure to visit us on our website.
All right.
Thank
More
you for
so
next
much.
Week. Have a great week.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.